But I'm ready when you are, man. So let's make it happen.
Let's do it live. Hey, everybody. Welcome to Protector Season 4, Episode 20 or 30. I don't even know anymore. It's getting great, though. I've been having so many incredible guests that I just want to record all the time. But I can't. I can't. But I would. Because I like having guests like I have today. Frank, Reps for Responder. He is a law enforcement officer somewhere in the East. Maybe New York. We don't know. Maybe Boston. Somewhere out there. Frank, welcome to the show, brother.
Jason, Dr. Piccolo, thank you. Thank you so much for having me on. It's an honor. And I'm happy to be on episode 20 or 30 and share my strengths and experience and hope with you and listeners and hopefully just affect just one, right?
No, you already affected one because here's the deal. Frank is involved with founder of Reps for Responders. And they had me on the show a few weeks ago and it really changed me. It made me think. It made me open up. And one thing I don't do a lot, I usually talk about the same old, blah, 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 whistleblower, that sucks, border, this, that. But I actually open up about my struggles with alcohol, with suicide, with everything. And that really changed me. It helped me say, hey, you know what? It's good to share my story. It's good to get it out there. So I appreciate you, brother.
No, thank you. And like I was said, you really opened up and it made, you know, you don't know anybody, especially social media, right? You don't know anyone, what their book entails. It's a book. It's a movie. I say we're writing our own movie. We're the actor, we're the director, we're the filmmaker, we're the script writer, and we're sitting back and we're watching it. And I had no clue about your movie. So I just want to say thank you for sharing that. And it was great to hear. And I know a lot of people were affected by it, truly.
No, I agree. We all have a movie, whether you see, I'm close to 50. So my story is about 2 hours and 30 minutes. A lot of people, an hour and a half movie. They have books with a lot of chapters in them. My experiences in my life, your experiences in your life, they fill up chapters. And there's something we need to share in order for us to help each other. Because you know more than I do that the law enforcement world is hurting right now. And it's not just the social media. It's not just the public outlook. It's the, wow, this job is tough. But it also has a great days to it. There's greatness behind it, but there's also that tough thing. And you and I, right before we started the show, we're talking about, you know, a lot of people think they need to be like completely screwed up, like, you know, John Rambo Part 1 to come be part of Reps for Responders and come to the group and stuff, but they don't. You don't need to be fucked up. You need to be able to want to open up and share. And if you don't want to open up right away, fine. You don't want to share right away, fine. But it's a group where you can go and you could listen to other people's stories and you could discuss. So let's talk about it, bro. How did this all start?
Oh, man. We're gonna dive deep into the labyrinth now, Jason.
We are.
But yeah, real quick, like you said, the only requirement is to be a first responder. That's it. And you just have to show up. That is it. So, yeah, it started with basically my journey was 2015, I graduated the police academy and became a police officer and went into a very busy command, giving hints of kind of where I work. But I went to a busy command and I live about, from the city, I live about 45 minutes. So it was a whole new world for me. And when I first got there, I was like, what am I doing here? And then it ended up changing. Worked with a lot of different cultures, religions, backgrounds, and it was great. It opened up, it got me out of my own little bubble and said, wow, this is like what the real world is. So I did that for about 2 years in a busy house. I worked 4 to 12 shifts, answering probably like 20 calls a night, 20 to 25 jobs a night. And in 2018, I decided to leave this department and I went to my hometown department because the job I work at, everyone's like, you got to leave, you got to go somewhere else, the job is dead. All this talk, right? And I'm like, yeah, rah, rah. You're like, they're so right. Meanwhile, I never had any bad experiences on the job. So anyway, I left and called it the golden ticket, the Willy Wonka golden ticket. Went to my hometown department. More money, safer to home, closer to home, safer. And I got there and it was like hitting a brick wall, man. I said to myself, wow, Frank, this is not for me. Like, I knew within like the first month, probably first few weeks, like, this is not for me. And I couldn't get out of my head, man. I kept on saying, am I going to do solo patrol? Because where I work, it's two guys, you know, two partners to a car. Am I going to do solo patrol in my home the rest of my life? And most likely the smaller apartments is patrol, you know, doing the same thing. And I couldn't get out of my head. It was like the song, should I stay or should I go? And it started to bother me. And I started getting very anxious. Like, listen, we all know you get the anxieties and the fear when you start a new job, a relationship, a test, right? Like, that's the human response to a fight or flight or freeze. But for this, it was over and beyond. And the first time it was really happening to me, played college football, competitive powerlifting, like, was in a very busy command, and it wasn't this extreme at all. And I said, something's wrong. So I started hanging out with my two friends, Jack and Jose. For you guys that don't know, Jack Daniels and Jose Cuervo. And they weren't my friends. They were saying, come on, man, hang out with us, you know, for the night, you'll be fine, you'll get over it. But it just kept on getting worse and worse and worse. And one day I just woke up, still in the hometown, my hometown precinct, and everything was like dark, man. Everything was black and gray. Now, literally, was everything black and gray? No, but that was my perception, and I couldn't feel anything anymore. And I'm like, all right, something is wrong. And I'm like, holy shit, Frank, I think you're depressed. I stopped eating. I remember in the patrol car, my diet, man, was just a green tea from Dunkin' Donuts, and it was like a shake. And that was it. That's all I could eat. And it was starting to take over me. And I ended up finally like seeing somebody on the side, shrink, and, you know, not telling everyone everything is great, but people knew, like, what, you know, you okay? I'm like, yeah, no, I'm fine. Like, they knew I was going through a hard time. And, I ended up getting diagnosed with major depressive disorder and alcohol use disorder. And I was like, this is not. So people were at that time, I'm 29 now. I got on the job at 23. I was 25 when I got into this department. And, you know, people were like, don't go back. You'll ruin your life. Give it more time. And when you're in that state of mind and you can't even make a decision of what you want to eat, or you can't even tie your shoes, you're going to listen to anybody. You just want to feel like that sense of relief. So I was like, maybe they're right. And I battled it. And I was like, first of all, as we know, and this is probably a common thought process, I'm a cop. Handing in my gun and shield or telling anybody is the last thing I'm ever going to do, ever. So for 10 months, I battled it, and I was like, all right, I got to go back to the city. So I went back to the city, and when I went back to the city, people were like, oh, was it that bad? Blah, blah, blah. I was like, listen, it just wasn't for me. But no one knew that if I didn't leave this department, that suicidal ideation was on my mind. So in my mind, it was like this. All right, Frank, you go back, you give it hell, you give it a shot, or you might eat your gun. So for me, it was like a life or death situation that I take full responsibility of, right, for creating. Nobody put a needle or a bottle to my mouth and said, you know, this is your outcome, this is what's going to happen. So I went back to the city, and my family was like, you need more help, like, this is bad. So at the time, I didn't really know what to do, so I was like, all right, I'm gonna do it. So I ended up just checking myself into a hospital, New York Presbyterian Hospital. And from there, that's kind of where my journey started. So I don't know if you want me to continue, because there's a lot more stories for that. Or
yeah, I want to talk about what we just talked about. I want to, you know, about what you just talked about, because there's a lot to that story. There's a lot that I want to break down a little bit. And one of them is that first time you took a step, and I've been there. A lot of people have been there, but really, you almost have to hit like rock bottom before you take that step to get help. You know, to me, it was even before the booze is when I really, it was when I was having those really dark, and you call it black and white, I call it like I had this sponge of darkness in my head, this sponge of just complete darkness. When I hit it, I was numb. I didn't care about anything. I thought my life would, my family's life would be a lot better if I wasn't in it. But it was a numbness. It was a complete numbness. It wasn't like, hey, you know what? I'm just going to do it. And I wasn't reaching out. I wasn't crying out for help. Nobody even knew. Nobody knew until years later that I was feeling that way. So it's like, it was almost beyond ideation. But then when I first sought help, it wasn't easy. So I want to talk about how you, I mean, everybody's an expert in your life at this point. Everybody knows what's good for Frank. But when did Frank say, hey, you know what? I'm at the lowest. I need to get help because it's not easy, man, especially with you're young on a job, badging a gun, and you're like, shit, if I go and someone finds out, they might take that badge and gun away from me. So where'd you get the strength, or where did you get the kick in the butt to go and get help?
Yeah, that's basically when it was at that point where I said, I surrendered because I was fighting it for 10 months. My family was a huge help in that process. And my girlfriend at the time, who's now my fiance, she actually had to walk away from the relationship because she was getting sick. And I started seeing people kind of just walk away. And I said, I can't do this by myself. And there was just like a little voice in my head saying, like, you know, you can do this, you can do this. But it was very tiny. It was a very tiny, tiny song in my head. But I was like, I have no other options. Obviously, I'm going insane. So what insanity is doing the same thing over and over again, expecting different results. And that wasn't working for me. So when I went to the New York Presbyterian, little did I know that when I signed the waiver that it was going to be a full-blown psych ward. So I'm in here. And I'm like, wow, Frank, now I'm really done. I'll never be a cop. So now my motivation's going down. Then I had like none. So I'm like a negative. I'm like in a negative motivation mark now. And, you know, I'm with really sick people, as in schizophrenia, psychosis. I mean, a girl walked into the halls with a book on her head saying that there's a camera in her eye. And I was like, oh, man. And I can't leave because I said, listen, basically stating, I don't care if I live, the suicidal ideation. So I was there for 6 weeks. I got out at week three, and it was kind of like the Joker. You walk out and you start laughing at yourself. And you say, oh my God, Frank, you're worse. So I went back and I said, listen, nothing has helped. At that time, I was on 7 different SSRIs, antidepressants, not at the same time, but trying to find the one that worked for me. In like a 4 or 5 months, 6 months period. And I felt like a lab rat, you know, and I felt like, why would I take this medication when I could just drink? Right. So when I went back, I said, listen, I'm drinking. And they're like, oh, you should have told us that in the first place. So I was still hiding it. I was still trying to hide it. And I went to a little inpatient rehab, got out. And then my PBA rep came and took my gun and shield. And I had to see this department psychologist. I said, listen, and I still try to hold my ground. I said, I want to get better. I want to be a cop. I really love being a cop. I said, I just need help. I don't know what to do. So even at the time where I was at, they're like, oh, we recommend you do this and that. And I was like, there was no steady like plan. So me and my family looked more, and my mom was a big help and was like, listen, here's this place called High Watch Recovery Center in Kent, Connecticut. You should give this a shot. It looks great. And I was fighting it even for like a month. And then I went into the New York Presbyterian in November of 2018, and then I got out in like January of 2019, give or take the in and out part. And then I fought it, you know, February, and towards the end of February, I went to High Watch Recovery Center for 6 weeks, and I got out and I felt great. And I got transferred to a different unit, and I said, all right, I'm feeling better. So what am I going to do? What is Frank going to do? He's only going to drink at Yankee games. He's only going to drink at the Jersey store. He's only going to drink where no one knows who he is, right? And it's not all the time. It was like, those are the thoughts I had in my head. So I realize that I'm trying to run from myself. But the funny thing is, Jason, as you know, you can never run from yourself. When you look in the mirror and you say you hate yourself, that's one of the worst feelings in the world. I think it is the worst feeling. Like when you have so much hate and resentment and anger towards you, that's where it gets very dangerous, not only for you, but the people around you. So I, you know, tried to play that game and it wasn't working. And I remember in August, it was September. I went to a wedding, September 22nd of 2019. And I said to myself, all right, I'm going to drink a little bit. I'm going to try to control it. And my girlfriend, my fiance now came back into my life. We had a talk at a dog park, and it's called like a spiritual awakening. The day after the wedding, she came. I said, why do you want to do this to yourself? You fought, you made it this far. You still have your job. I'm coming back into your life. And she's like, I'm this close to walking away. You know, your friends and family are supporting you. They're starting to come back. Like, why do you want to throw it away for this? I'm like, you know what? You're absolutely right. So I hit an AA meeting that night, and then I've been sober since September of 23rd of 2019.
Wow, brother. And, you know, I've seen it with you where you've gone beyond just helping yourself and trying to excise those demons to helping others. And that's one of the reasons I really wanted to talk to you today, too, is I wanted to hear your story. But then I also wanted to hear how the Reps for Responders started, because I didn't. I was kind of like, you know, I saw this social media. I was like, oh, that's pretty cool. But yeah, there's nothing wrong with me. And I'm like, but then you see what you guys are doing behind the scenes and having these meetings. And it's a very eye-opening experience to think that there are so many of us out there, so many people like you that want to help others, and so many people like me who need help from others. So how did the Reps for Responders start? How did you, when was there some a catalyst that said, hey, you know what? Now that I'm getting better, I need to help other people.
When I started to dive into the AA program and stuff, and I started to look into first responder statistics. And in 2019, a certain department had 10 officers lose their lives to suicide. 2019 alone. 12 if you count the two guys that just retired. So that's 12. And I said, wow, I could have been number 11 active. And then I started looking into more. 20% of everyday people suffer from PTSD, anxiety, and depression. And that increases to 30% for first responders. And the average age of a cop is 57 and 65. And one in five police officers have a suicidal ideation in their lifetime. And I said, wait a second, you know, I'm not alone. And started, like I said, was diving really more into this. And I said, all right. I went, literally was at the gates of Hades. I was at the gates of hell. Like, I had one foot in, one foot out, and I almost went there. I said, how can I just make sure that no one ever has to, that's the first thought, right? No, I don't want anyone to experience what I went through. And then I said, all right, well, working out, eating as healthy as I can, and talking about my day, just like the conversation we're having right now, Jason, good or bad, with like-minded individuals, has helped me. So I said, all right, I know nothing about business. I know nothing about the nonprofit world, but I'm going to start a nonprofit. So I dove right into that. Of course, the go 100% behavior that addicts have, and started a nonprofit in officially in January of 2020. And I said, all right, the mission and the plan is free open gym for first responders and military. Put it together. March of 2020, we opened up the gym free for first responders and military. So now the Reps for Responders umbrella is law enforcement officers, firefighters, EMS, EMT, correction officers, nurses, and police dispatchers, and military. So the gym was just a mirage to draw guys and girls in, because if I said, hey, I want to have meetings at this office space, it's going to be me, myself, and I every single time. No one's going to want to come in. So the gym was to draw guys and girls in. So now I'm thinking, if I'm a cop here in New York and in my command and I'm going through something, I might not want to talk about it with someone in my command, but maybe somewhere closer to me, or a firefighter in New York, or maybe somewhere else, another cop in around the area. You know, grab coffee before, after, meet up. So I was like, all right, this sounds good. And people started backing the missions, started to GoFundMe, raise some money pretty fast, quickly. And that gave me more confidence in the team we were building. And then March of 2020, COVID happened, and the gym was open for 10 days and we closed the doors for good. So if that doesn't want to make you drink again, I don't know what will.
This special episode brought to you by Big Tech's Ordnance, bigtechsordnance.com. What I love about Big Tech's Ordnance is they have live inventory, meaning if I want a product and I look on their website and it says it's there, it's there. And most likely, if I order that day, it will ship that day. If you're looking for parts for a Glock, you want to upgrade your Glock, you want to build a Glock, head over there. You want to upgrade an AR-15, go there. You want to buy a brand new AR-15 top of the line? Go there. Big Tech's Ordnance, incredible inventory, anything from, like I said, Glock, the Trigicon, the Surefire. And the inventory is live. If it says out of stock, it's out of stock. But guess what? If it's in stock, it's there and you could order it. Their customer service is beyond reproach. I've called them. I need anything. They're on it. So check out Big Tech's Ordnance. What happened, man? I mean, what happened? Like, when that gym closed down, What was it like, hey guys, girls, by the way, you newbies here, we really need to keep talking. We really need to keep doing this. Was it like the Zoom generation?
Like, yeah, so
drinking from a fire hose, trying to figure out how to do this thing.
Yeah, so everyone, obviously, a lot of course, other gyms, like, you know, unfortunately, businesses had to close down, and we ended up going virtual, and we started the meetings via Zoom, and we're like, all right, let's just give this a shot, and it started, like, you know, 3 or 4 people in the meeting, and then it just slowly started, like, trickle up, post after post after post. We were posting online workouts, we were posting different things, and basically what our program entails now, not only are we, you know, we're not surviving, like, we're thriving. Like, when we're like, all right, right now where we're at, we're like, we made it through this. So it's like, we made it through the hard part, and it makes you feel confident. Like, if I can get through this, then, like, I can get through anything. It's the same thing with recovery. So every Sunday we run a meeting called Responder Talk, 7 to 8 p.m. Eastern time. And it's open to any first responders and military, active or retired. And we've had check-ins from 18 different states across the country. We have a topic meeting. We have a speaker meeting, as you were a guest speaker. And now we have, we have guys in New York checking in with police officers, Capitol Police, Texas Rangers, New Jersey State Troopers, detectives in Arizona, NYPD personnel. All these different types of people are now connecting with each other and becoming friends and opening up. So that's a huge part of our program. We work with 2 mental health professionals, and what we do is we sponsor active first responders. See, a lot of guys and girls are afraid to see a shrink and go on their insurance. So we raise money, like, hey, we'll pay for the first few sessions, 3 to 5 sessions with this mental health professional before diagnosis really happens. And then if you want to continue on your own, you go through insurance, or we figure out a way. And we explain, listen, you're allowed to see a mental health professional where I'm at. And no one will ever know. The only way anyone will know is if you raise your hand and say, hey, I'm seeing X, Y, and Z. So we'll do that for people that first responders really want to go above and beyond that call. We've done a resiliency skills group. We've done 1, 2, 3, 4 sets of groups. So we'll do, first we did 8 first responders at a time. It was too much. So now we break it down to 2 to 3 first responders at a time. And it's a 4-week course. And you're just learning, 1 week is grounding skills. 1 week is coping. 1 week is anxiety, depression. 1 week is substance abuse. And just giving the first responder some tools to take with them so they can live, learn, and pass on to the next first responder or to them, to themselves in the future. So in the fitness side, now we've developed partnerships in my area where we have a CrossFit gym, strength and conditioning gym, and a Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu gym. We'll pay for the first responders' first months. So all we ask is, hey, you have to check in 8 times a month, minimum. That's twice a week. If you do that, we'll pay for months 2. And it's 60 days. And sometimes our first responder goes above and beyond. And we have given out 90 days. We paid for 3 months of their gym membership and give them a little edge to, hey, you know, let's get you learn. Let's teach you how to swim a little bit. And then you're on your own. You feel confident and comfortable, and you go on your own. And I would say about the gym, 80% of the people that do the gym sponsorship either sign up or they take what they learn. And now they're at the gym. They're at another local gym that's maybe a little less money, or they're at that precinct and they're working out. We have a nutritionist and health and wellness coach that does meal programming, but it's first behavior before anything. Focus on sleep, focus on, are drinking too much caffeine, nicotine. Try to get some behaviors and habits down before you jump right into a meal plan, saying, hey, follow this meal plan for a week and I'll see you next week. No, it doesn't work like that, because if I work a day shift and Jason, you work a night shift, it's going to be a completely different lifestyle. We have that as well. So if you kind of look at the square, on the top of the left of the square, you have fitness. On the top right, you have nutrition. On the bottom left, you have fitness. And then on the bottom right, you have your cognitive behavior, talking, peer support. And in the middle, you have your reps for responders. And I take that back. I said fitness twice. If you have to, you know, take medication or anything, that's okay. But again, that's not just part of the, you don't just take the pill and say everything's going to be okay. See, I believe all 4 of these part of the pillars gets you into the middle. And that's kind of our program. Last year, we've had great success in 2021. We did 27 gym sponsorships, which is 2 to 3 months at a time. We did 13 nutrition and health coaching sponsorships. We did 53 resiliency skills training between the classes and personal one-on-ones. So I'm very proud of the work that we have done. And we raised money for the nutrition, the fitness, and the resiliency training. And then again, the responder talk is just free for anybody that ever wants to join and come in. And we do events to raise money We usually do a workout in honor of the police officer suicide, police officers that lost their lives to suicide. So in 2019, there's 239 police officers that lost their lives to suicide and countrywide. 2020, 175, and last year, 153. So the events now in 2022, we'll make a workout based on the 153 of last year, and we do a workout around that. And you know, we have a few guest speakers and everything. So we're really raising awareness, and they're not all first responders too, which is important because there's civilians at these events learning about first responder mental health to back your community to say, hey, first responders are more than just a uniform. It's more than just a costume. It's we're people too. We have our own domestics, car accidents, things that we go through in life. But to really get this down pat is have to focus on our mental health first and have that backing between the first responder line, right, that in quotes, that blue line that I laugh out, and then the community.
Yeah, I like the fact that you're bringing a community in. I like the fact that agencies, I mean, they've been doing it for years, you know, having members of the community come in and do ride-alongs or this and that. But I'd see a lot more of it happening now where they're having citizen academies. But not just that, but if you're having your nonprofit bringing in civilians, it's kind of like the ripple effect saying, hey, you know what? These guys and girls with the badge, they're going through some shit right now. They're going through some shit and we could help out too. It's not, you could bridge that line. You can get over that line and do it, man. And that's what I like about, I like that there's no bullshit hidden agenda. I've been around nonprofits a long time, especially with this podcast and stuff. And you kind of see who's in it for profit more than non. And it's good that you guys are actually out there doing this. So what do you think about expansion? Are you working with other areas? Because you said you're getting a really wide reach, and it's got to be tough to manage. And so how can people help you manage getting your message out there?
Yeah, it is definitely tough to manage when you add in, you think about it too, and people get overwhelmed with a lot of things, of course. And it's like keeping that it's like when you're running full speed, it's like, all right, like, do you want to stop? Do you not want to stop? Do you want to take a walk? And that's the thing. Like, I can't do this by myself, and I've never done this by myself. And we have a good group of a team that volunteers and helps out, and the amount of community support that we have gotten. And basically the reach of just social media of just one post at a time, and it trickles down. And we've done events in Rhode Island. We've done an event in Virginia. We've done gym sponsorships in New Jersey. We've done gym sponsorships in the surrounding areas in New York here. So, you know, I'm just taking it one day at a time. Would I love to open up like a full gym again, maybe one day? Yes. But also we're giving back to the community saying, hey, now the first responder is working out with it's getting away from the first responder lifestyle. So if you work a 4 to 4, which is you work a 4 to midnight and then you go out to the bar after 4, what do you talk about? You talk about the job. You talk about cop stuff, right? But you're in a group now with positive people and civilians, and you kind of just break away from that lifestyle for a little bit. So that's why I think that's very important to just go into a gym that's a positive setting, a group setting, and it's not always just first responders. So you're kind of giving yourself a pause and letting that hypervigilance down. So I'm not too sure how you feel about that, but I personally believe that if you are a cop, you should try to have friends that aren't always cops.
Absolutely, man. But back in the day for me, it used to be all my friends were in the military. Then all my friends were in law enforcement. And now I got fucking friends all over. I don't even know. Some people are like, who do you work for? I'm like, yeah, you know, they're like, you're a federal agent. And I'm like, yeah, they let you have tattoos. Just like people don't, I don't wear my badge on my shoulder, my heart, or anything anymore. It's just part of my job. But I love having normal friends. I love talking to people. I love learning from different people. And if you get close into that community, you never learn anything. And that's what I'm liking about like this whole Protect Our Community, is because like this whole, it's expanded beyond just the people who have the badge and the veterans and all that. It's people who support us. It's people who want to know more. It's people who are just, you know, hey, we're all protectors in our own way. So it's great to have friends that aren't in this community. You know, as long as they're not assholes, you know, that's cool. So how can we support you guys, Frank?
Yeah, well, first of all, I appreciate your support as always. And listen, just getting involved, you know, on Instagram, we're at reps_4_responders, reps4responders.org. You can shoot an email, repforresponders@gmail.com, and just get involved. The best way to support, honestly, is to follow, see what events we're doing, but join the responder talk. See what other first responders are talking about, and then you learn and you're like, hey, maybe this is for me and I'm going to continue, or maybe this is not for me and I don't need it at this time, which people do think, but I know somebody in my firehouse or my police or my police station that may need this. So I'm going to, you know, give this, let someone know about this. And that's really what it's happening about is word of mouth, where we have people saying, I came to one of your events before. I know you guys do great work, but I have this person that's going through this. Can I send them your way? Absolutely. And we're going to do the best to help them. And if we can't, we will find an organization that will help that first responder. See, because what I love too, and we're so diverse of in the group, is we have the two mental health professionals. One of them is a retired cop. One of them is an addiction and trauma specialist. We have retired cops. We have detectives. We have a firefighter. You know, I have all these different types of people on our team that can most likely relate. And that's just their title, their job. But what about their life experience? You know, and we go that's where if someone comes to me and something that I'm not too really sure about, most likely I can find someone on the team or the responder talk to say, hey, I've never personally been through this. I can. Right. So someone in the group that has a different experience that I never went through, we can send them to that person, you know, maybe. And then also in the community, hey, they might be down in freaking Florida, but there's already a cop that's close in Florida that's been part of the group, now that they can meet up and things like that. It's happened all the time, especially in New Jersey.
Well, you know, one thing too is like, I do want to reiterate, we talked about this in the beginning. You don't have to be at your darkest time. You don't have to be quote unquote broken to join or be part of this or to see what's going on. You can just say, hey, you know what? I want to see what's going on. My nutrition is kind of jacked up. I gained some weight. I'm drinking a little bit too much or none of it. Maybe you just want to see what's going on because you have people, you know, that could use help and you want to get a feel. But that's why I say help out doesn't have to be just money. Money helps. It does. But sharing posts, seeing what's going on, getting involved, volunteering. And I say again, liking and sharing really does help. And that's what I mean. You don't have to be broken to be part of it.
Absolutely. And thank you for pointing that out again, because you don't. And I firmly believe, this is my belief system, is that you're one traumatic incident away. And first responders are always exposed to traumatic incidents from picking up a drink, from picking up a pill, from coping with strip clubs, cheating on your significant other. You're one event away. So now if we can build these coping skills and this belief system of just talking about what we're going through instead of holding it in, I think it'll decrease that chance of what I just talked about significantly down the road. And especially when we retire, because I want to mention this too, Jason, a lot of first responders and cops, when they retire, they're like, go, 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 go. And then they stop and you know, maybe they'll drink, they'll do other things, and their mind was just going 100% in their body for so long, and now they're rested. And people in recovery and first responders were kind of drawn towards that chaos. So then when you have to sit with yourself and there's no chaos around, that is the hardest, that is very hard to understand. So we can get this down pat before the retirement and make that post-retirement plan of saying, hey, maybe I want to be a personal trainer or get into recovery or just volunteer somewhere, but just keeping yourself busy and calm. So I really wanted to just put that out there too.
Absolutely, brother. I am so glad you brought that up about retirement, because the other thing too about retirement is your mission's over. So you're not finding another mission. Some people just want to, hey, their new mission is go serve, fish, whatever. That's cool, but you have something. Don't just sit there, because you're going to feel like you're losing out on your brotherhood, sisterhood, and you're alone. Keep your connections, make new connections. And that's why it's great to have, you know, friends that are outside of the community, you know, because, you know, just as well as I do, like sometimes when you leave places, I've left agencies and, you know, you get kind of cut off, but find a mission and find people to have a support network in place.
Yeah, absolutely. And find a mission that you truly believe in. Don't just try to do something because all the guys, when they retire, they're being a cop down in Florida or they're doing security or they're doing, if you want to do that, go ahead. But if you were always afraid to do, like, you know, if you had a hobby, I don't know if it was painting or whatever, right? You know, I could see a guy doing some painting and getting his balls busted and in the roll call, but don't be afraid of that. Don't lie to yourself. Be frank with yourself, right? The truth will set you free. And there's nothing about doing what you believe. There's nothing, no better feeling than finding your calling in quotes through life experience and then just listening to yourself. That yourself will set you down the path that you're meant to be on.
Absolutely, brother. Well, I appreciate you coming on, man. I appreciate you opening up. I really wanted to know your story, and now I do. And I'm like, wow, man, fucking good for you. And I'm glad you're doing all this for everybody else. It's kicking ass, man. And I really look forward to, you know, getting more involved and helping you guys out as much as I can.
Yeah, thank you, man. I really appreciate you letting me share my strength experience and hope today. And thank you for everything that you do. And you're a perfect example of more than just outside the job. I mean, look how much you're involved with. And I think you would agree with me is that we're just regular guys. We're cops yeah. that went through a hard time. And here's another thing. I'd rather take anybody in recovery that is honest with themselves and went through a hard time and accepted this is what happened, took responsibility and fixed it on a backup any single day of the week, than the best cop out there who's great at police work, but we know that they're lying behind closed doors and everything.
Mm-hmm.
So thank you for what you do.
Absolutely, brother.